The Cambridge Marketing Podcast with Kiran Kapoor. Brought to you by Cambridge Marketing College. See their range of courses and apprenticeships at marketingcollege.com.
Hello and welcome. In our occasional series of marketing models, we've now reached C. C, of course, covers the customer, communications, competitors, cost, and channels to market. As they're all rather large topics, we're going to actually just take two of those, and we're going to have a quick look at cost, and then we're going to have a longer look at customers. So, do you know how much your product or service costs? Far too many marketers leave this sort of messy, dirty business of costing to finance. You should have at least a rule of thumb idea as to how much your product or service costs your company to make, the baseline cost. There's no point in coming up with wonderful marketing ideas if you don't really understand the implications for adding additional costs on to the baseline costs. You've got to understand where the profit margin should be, where your company is actually going to make finance from. But equally, particularly for marketing, far more importantly, is to understand the cost to your customer, not the price. The price is just the money your customer spends. The cost is the total of the money, the risk, the inconvenience, and the knock-on issues that your customer is going to experience. That's your customer's costs. And no one else in the company is going to look at that if marketing doesn't. So if you're selling, for example, a software solution to an organization, the cost to the customer is not just the cost of that software solution. It's the cost of the staff training, the data migration, the risks of the new system perhaps not working smoothly, the risks of data security. These are the customer's costs. A great tutor, now retired at the college, Tony Wilson, used to talk about having a grumpy finance director at the organisation who would look at all the knock-on pain points and costs and keep demanding why the company should incur this wider cost implication, hence the grumpy finance director. So as a marketer, you need to know the answer to that. And you cannot if you're so caught up in just the price that you haven't considered the wider cost. So in a consumer market, for example, if a potential customer is looking for a new kitchen, all too often companies concentrate on just the cost of the appliances and the new units. Think about it from a customer's perspective. You've got the cost of clearing out the old kitchen and disposing of it. You've got all the costs of eating out while you don't have a kitchen. You've got the costs of making good at the end of your installation. These are all additional to the simple units and appliances. And all too often, companies just concentrate on the price. You need to be looking at the wider pain points. So costs are all about the customer's perspective. And one of the models we can use to understand the customer's perspective is a customer journey analysis. So a customer journey is looking at the whole path that the customer takes. And here is Daryl Fielding, ex-marketing director at Mondelez, to explain.
So a customer journey is the full path that your customer or stakeholder takes from that very first twinkle in the eye that might end up with them buying and using and possibly sharing their experiences of your product or service. And in many cases these days, people only plot that customer journey when people are engaging with the brand digitally, if that happens. But of course, there's far more to it than that. They can track which elements of a website or app people click on and click through and their dwell time and things like that. But the whole picture is much broader and more complicated, and you need to fully understand what drove them to that site, how they got there, what their first trigger was, right the way through to whether they recommend that product to a friend. So the customer journey is a much more well-rounded picture than just the digital element of a sale.
That's great. It's a sort of broad overview. So can I ask you for an actual example?
Yes. We first discovered the real magic of the customer journey when we were trying to figure out the Tassimo brand at Mondelez, actually. And we plotted in detail exactly what had happened. And of course, like most brand teams, there were many, many, many assumptions made as to what happened to drive the sales of that. We advertised the brand on television quite extensively, and we assumed that people had awareness of Tassimo, their coffee machine, their brewer, their old-fashioned brewer, as opposed to the Nespresso-style machine that, Tassimo, the family that Tassimo belongs to. Their brewer broke, their old-fashioned brewer broke. We assumed that they were aware of a few brands because they'd seen them advertised, and that then they sort of Googled them, checked them out, and went in store. And when we looked at what actually happened, when we interviewed customers and we tracked what they actually did, we found that there was a completely different trigger to purchase. And actually, what was that trigger was them visiting a friend's house who had just acquired one of these new type machines. Therefore, we had been spending a fortune operating on incorrect assumptions around that particular product. And we shifted our marketing in line with the truth of what the customer was doing, where we rewarded massively the individuals who purchased the product so that they would become very, very passionate advocates for Tassimo. And we also invested very, very heavily in digital and point of sale. And we actually pulled money away from TV advertising because it didn't play a very particular big role in driving sales of this particular type of product. So that's an example of a customer journey. How do people, you know, what was the trigger? What made them start to think about buying it? How did they buy it? How did they experience it? And that sharing element, in the word of mouth part for that particular brand was absolutely enormous. So that's one example that inspired us at Mondelez to sort of institutionalize this thinking and make it part of our marketing process, which was to map the customer journey. And we created a tool that was quite sophisticated. Actually, we invested money in the technology for it. But it also had to work in big, sophisticated, data-rich markets, as well as smaller markets where they didn't have an awful lot of research. So we would ask lots and lots of questions about, you know, the elements of that customer journey that they could answer from their understanding and experience, or from, you know, really good, robust data, and create a proper picture of what actually happened for any brand when the customer engaged with it and it led to a sale or not. Actually, when people didn't buy it, we also wanted to know what was happening. And we deployed this process with over 100 teams and 100 brands when I was there. And in 98% of cases, there was a light bulb moment about, oh my God, you know, we thought this is what the customers were doing, or we had assumed this is what the customer was doing. And actually, it wasn't what they were doing. They discovered something very different when they really looked into actual behaviour. And therefore, they would change their marketing accordingly. And they all got great results from that better insight and understanding.
So Daryl explains in detail there how you look at a customer journey and how you understand what the customer is going through. And another way of looking at that is to look at the customer experience. And here is college fellow Andrew Hatcher to explain.
One of the biggest problems, I suppose, over time is that I tend to feel that companies have grasped at certain things. One of my little phrases is that CRM is the enemy of customer experience, because CRM is generally a mechanism, and I say CRM meaning customer relationship management. So companies have grasped the idea of gathering data around companies as being, you know, their contribution to customer experience. Now, part of the problem is that CRM collects data, but customer experience should be collecting thoughts and feelings and responses. Measuring customer experience is complicated, there's no doubt about it, and people often substitute, if you like, customer satisfaction for customer experience. And this is partly because most of the measurement that most companies do is at the end. So we measure at the end. So if I ask you about your experience at the end of the experience, you're asking the customer to have an average experience measurement of everything that happened from the first point they interacted with you till the current point that they're at. Now that's really hard because that's going to be a mixture of some average ones, some high ones, and some low ones. So you're going to get an average customer measurement. But you don't really know whether there are some elements of that journey were amazingly brilliant and some of them weren't particularly good. Also, customer satisfaction, the evidence seems to show, is it is heavily weighted to things that didn't work well rather than things that did work well. So if you're on balance, if you had a great experience and a poor experience, customer satisfaction will tend down towards the poor experience because that's more memorable.
Yes, that's true. So what is your suggestion, that you measure continually?
Yes, you can. Now, there is a, like with all these things, it's a bit of a balance. And that customers, if you keep on asking the customer, are you okay? Are you okay? It's like sitting at a restaurant. And if the waiter comes up to you every 3 minutes and says, everything all right, you know, you tend to go away pretty quickly. So there is a tolerance of measurement, which we have to be aware of. But there are key points, as I say, if we map this customer journey effectively, we can almost identify when the best points are to measure or when the most critical points in that customer journey are to measure. And often the customer is not necessarily deterred from responding to you if they know they've passed through a point. So, for instance, if they purchased something, you know that's a point at which it would be good to measure. Or if they have asked a question about something, you know that's a good point to measure. And if you go to them after the purchase and ask if there's anything else, you know, feedback processed at the end after they purchased, is that a good point to measure? So in any customer journey, there's probably some optimal points where you could put in some measurement just to see whether you have some sort of consistent level of high experience all the way through. And it just enables you to identify where the weak points are as also in that journey.
And lastly, before we finish, customers, remember that your customer may not be the end user. So in a pharmaceutical company selling drugs, their customer is the commissioning health practitioner, the person that actually orders and gives out the drugs. But the end user is somebody who's actually taking the drugs. And the end user may have their own journey, their own experiences, and their own other points and cost points that you need to consider. And that's all for this week. Thank you for listening. You can find all 100 past podcasts wherever you get your podcasts from. Do please subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and you can join our many subscribers, particularly in the UK, the US, the UAE, and Azerbaijan. I'll be back again next week. Thank you for listening.